How you doing, wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast. We are the only wrestling podcast that brings you back 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. And this episode, as each and every week, is no exception. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight covered all the news stories and breaking developments that happened in real time, and now we get to relive those moments right here on this show. Joining me, as always, direct from New York, wearing his wonderful Montauk Point T-shirt and in his, I guess, I'm not going to even call it the Fortress of Solitude there you are up in New York, but you look comfortable, you look ready to go.
Yep.
The former managing editor of Pro Wrestling Illustrated and so many other newsstand magazines he did wonderful work for back in the day. Let's say hello to Mr. Bob Smith.
Hello there.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, John. And I'll tell you what. Here's a little trivia for you. This past June, okay, I went to Montauk. And I have lived in the New York, Long Island area for since late 80s now. You know, when I met you, okay, I'd never been to Montauk. I never had the opportunity to go. And I finally had a little time off to myself. And I said, let's go to Montauk. And you know what? Time of my life. It's beautiful, serene.
It's beautiful there.
Just watching the beach, man, was just what I needed. It's the first thing I had approaching a vacation in literally 15 years or so. I'm not even making this up. So to have a few days just to stare at the ocean, and eat some incredible food. They have awesome restaurants and friendly people. It's like a small town that's also a huge tourist. The way they have the town set up, it's so nice. It doesn't feel like a tourist trap, even though it is. You know, the gift shops and all that stuff that's there. But I had a wonderful time, and I can't wait to go back, to be honest with you. I don't even care what the weather is. I would just love to go back anytime.
Did you go up the lighthouse?
No. We had a limited amount of time. I think we were there for 4 days. We decided to just beach it out, you know.
It takes about a day to walk up the lighthouse, actually.
Is that so? For me, it would take 2 days then.
But, Montauk is great. Nice shirt. We're hanging out here. Let's also bring on our producer and creative director of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, direct from Tucson, Arizona, Marsh. Marsh,
hey, how you doing? How's it going?
How's your week been?
It's been pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty busy. You know, when I lived in New York, I used to, anytime someone visited me, I took them to Montauk.
You did?
Well, not everybody, but yeah, a good chunk of people I took to Montauk because it's just that cool and scenic and Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind did a bunch of stuff there. The little taco shop you probably saw in that little roundabout was the cafe. That was what the diner was, where he was sitting alone having that coffee in the movie.
Yeah, I actually stayed probably within 2-3 blocks from there. One of those waterfront hotels.
Yeah, they're great.
Yes, yeah, I just, you know, it's like going far away without going far away. It was only like a 2-hour, 15-minute drive from where I live in Queens, and it was cool. Yeah. So fans, if you're looking for a cool, quiet, beautiful beachfront vacation, I recommend that joint.
Montauk.
That's right.
Go to Long Island.
Long Island.
Fun. I'll be going up to Long Island, I think, in a few weeks for Thanksgiving. So I'll be up there for 3 or 4 days and looking forward to seeing the family up there and seeing New York, seeing my old stomping grounds.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
But holidays are coming, gentlemen. Holidays are coming.
Yeah, quick too.
Yeah. But we certainly appreciate Marsh and all you doing. I mean, the YouTube channel is looking good. I mean, we premiered, another one of our video podcasts. We're getting good response. So just go to youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And there's a lot of content on there. Marsh, you've been doing a hell of a job, man. Still happy to see you here.
Yeah, and there's more on the way.
Haven't gotten pissed off at you yet.
Yeah, not yet. Have not quite irked you enough. Yeah, and there's more on the way. We're gonna do some more, I think, YouTube exclusive stuff coming up too. So
the Davey Boy, we spoke about that.
Yeah, I've already started it.
That is gonna be great because that really was, and we're gonna play a part two of it today on the show, but that complete interview, that half hour interview. I'm going to put it up for YouTubers, and I think that's his very first shoot interview ever I don't know how many he did in his life, but this one is going to go out there and we're going to push it hard. And I think people are really going to enjoy it in its entirety, unedited. So I can't wait for that to go up there, and that'll be exclusively on YouTube.
Yeah, and really unedited. I'm leaving in your 3-2-1 countdown to the beginning of the interview. I want people to know that that's where it started. Like, you know, the whole thing's there. Like, I don't want people to think we cut out half of it. That's it.
It's going to be something that everyone's going to enjoy. So look forward to that. And Marsh, as always, appreciate your time. As always, also, if we're running into a little problem here, stumped at a question, stumped at anything, I know you'll be popping up and helping us out.
Yeah, I'll pop back in if I need to. I haven't had anybody hit me up yet to tell me to stop, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, awesome. I thank you so much, and we'll be seeing you throughout the show. If you're watching this on the video pod, if not, you're going to be listening, and you'll be hearing his voice. All right. Bob?
That t-shirt? Did you see his t-shirt?
I didn't pay very attention to it.
T-shirt, I believe. That was cool. I don't know where he gets this stuff from.
Is the king? Yeah. Let's see. He's coming back. That is a nice one, man. Look at that.
That's a good one.
Oh, man. Memphis Lawler and WWE Lawler in the same shirt.
Kind of, yeah. Well, isn't...
Oh, no, that's AWA champion Lawler, right?
Yeah, that's the AWA, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, big Lawler, Kaufman nut, so.
Me too, baby. One of the greatest angles of all time. We already talked about that. It's just
We did. But yes, I want to talk about Patreon for a minute. If you are on the executive producer or producer levels, your magazines have been shipped out. I sent several classic magazines from the 80s, some of the 70s to our friends who are the executive producers here, Anthony Pyrus and Joseph Holloway. I mean, and also the other producer level guys as well. So those magazines are in transit to you. If you want to be part of our Patreon community, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/JohnArezzi. And for $5 a month, that gets you in the door. There are a lot of other levels, you know, anywhere from $5 up to $100 a month. And for each level you go up, you get more perks and you get more content and you get even some of these vintage wrestling magazines. Many of the stories written by Bob Smith.
Well, you know what? You know, this popped into my head the other day as I was perusing the Patreon area. I'll tell you what, fans, for you guys watching out there or listening, if you missed the flavor of the 70s wrestling magazines or the early 81, the Patreon site, your site has that going on because you covered so much stuff from those eras that it's almost like reading an old school wrestling mag. And it's missed that flavor. This site has that flavor, I think, anyway.
Yeah, and big news for the patrons. Earlier this week, I did another deal with Richard Land from the UK, and Richard is the person that has been compiling all of that vintage WWF TV stuff from the 70s, and he has a whole new batch of stuff that I haven't even dug into yet. Very classic stuff from the mid 70s. And he had, I think, over 500 newspaper clippings of WWF stuff. And I have access to that stuff now, too. So I'm going to be sharing that stuff with our patrons. So if you're interested, patreon.com/JohnArezzi, and you will certainly be satisfied with the content we deliver. So join it today if you can. Bob, got some big news here today.
Really?
Big news. Yes. We have a sponsor that has come aboard. And I'm going to bring Marsh back up. Marsh, if you're around, because I met this gentleman actually in Las Vegas. We were having lunch with our friend Medusa and her husband, Alan. And power twin David, and she introduced me to a person that she does ambassador work for, and it is curable.com. Curable is a company that is a fantastic company with the products they have that are for pain relief, CBD based stuff. So anyway, Tim, thank you. He's the head of Curable, and today will be the first time we talk to it, talk about it, promote it. And here's the deal. I personally have used CBD products for the last 5 years or so. As soon as it started coming out, I started using it. And I've used a lot of different brands. But when I met Tim and he gave me kind of a sample pack back in Vegas at the end of September, I immediately started using it, and it has been the best CBD product I've ever used. And that is not, as Joe Biden says, hyperbole.
Hyperbole. Yeah, yeah.
So it's not hyperbole. And so anyway, you know, you guys are going to be getting some product. Earlier today, I got a couple of boxes of stuff here. But it really is a great way to manage pain. And from anywhere, I mean, I tell you what my regimen is for Curable is like in the morning after I shower and all that, before I get dressed, I use the muscle cream, which is 2,000 milligrams of CBD. Or if I'm not really feeling that good in the morning, I'll use this muscle salve, which is a little bit more concentrated. And then when I get back, I walk every day. I do 2 to 3 miles a day. And when I get back, you know, you're feeling a little achy. My knee, because I have knee problems, I have neck problems. I had 2 back surgeries. And when I get back from that walk, I put this spray on. Or what I like the best is the cooling roll-on. It's like a, it's like a roll-on. And I just put it on myself, and it's a cooling effect. And I absolutely love it. But they have other products. They have gummies, right?
Yeah.
You have gummies, the gummies right there.
Right here. I just took one. I took the CBD and CBG mixed one because CBD alone is good, but CBD mixed with CBG for inflammation and pain specifically is really useful. Sitting on my terrible chair that I have here, I got the cheapest gaming chair I could find. I've been sitting here already for 6 hours today just doing editing. I've got another 4 hours ahead of me of podcasting that my back starts to hurt pretty good. So taking one or two of these throughout the day helps relieve a lot of that, if not all of it.
Yeah. And they got drops, like an eyedropper that's mint flavored. They have doggy treats. I mean, there's so many things to choose from. And I'm sure that our demographic that listens to this show, and I know we're running, you know, we're doing a long spot here today, but it's the first time with them. We have a promo code that you're going to be able to use to get 20% off your order. So anyone who goes to curible.com, K-U-R-I-B-L.com, use the promo code PWS, and you'll get your 20% discount at checkout. Now, this product is endorsed by some pretty cool people. Our friend Medusa, Deborah Michelli, is using it. And Kurt Angle, who everybody knows, and look at the issues that he had in his life. You know, he won the Olympic gold medal with a freaking broken neck, right? he's involved with the product, and he's actually going to be coming on this show from what Tim has told me. They're working that out now so we could have a nice interview with him, not really to talk about, you know, all the CBD stuff, but talk about his career. But anyway, Kurt uses it and manages pain for him. And why don't we go to Kurt now and play this spot to hear his story with Curable.
Hello, it's Kurt Angle, 1996 gold medalist and 13-time world professional wrestling champion for Curable Active. My job for years as a top professional wrestler was to give millions of wrestling fans 5-star matches they would remember for a lifetime. But to do my job, I had to put my body on the line. Unfortunately, I'm paying the price with injuries I've had on the mat and in the pro wrestling ring. My neck, which I broke 5 times, and I just had double knee replacement surgery, so I know pain. Aches and pains are part of life, and pain sucks. You can suffer with it or manage it with all-natural Curable Active. This decision changed my life. I apply Curable Active daily to my achy areas for soothing pain relief. If Curable Active can get me through my day, there's a good chance it can help you too. Get Curable Active just like thousands of others and save 20% today. Go to Curable.com, use promo code KURT20. That's KURIBL.com, code KURT20.
There you go. And for our promo code, which I hope you use with this show, is PWS. Just use that at Curable.com. One thing there, it's a family-run business, and all the premium hemp extract is grown at their Century Family Farms in Hastings, Minnesota, with four generations of experience. The stuff is really good. It works because I wouldn't be promoting it if it wasn't, and I use it religiously twice a day. Curable.com. Thank you, guys. Yep. And I want to hear you guys give a full report next week after you've tried it,
Mr. Smith. I can't wait, you know, because, you know, I am a huge supplements person to begin with. I take probably 17 different supplements every single day. And I have tremendous energy, people tell me, for someone my age. And they go, how do you do it? And just it's putting the right stuff in your body, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If you can do it, because I don't always eat right and I don't always get enough sleep and so on and so forth. So I'm anxious, especially the roll-on you talked about.
Ooh, I love it. It's my favorite.
Pain-killing roll-on. The fact that it has camphor and menthol in it as well, which I know are already pretty effective in terms of pain relief, how the CBD merges with that, I'm really anxious to try that. That sounds great.
Yeah, I've been working in a smoke shop for the past like year and a half or so, and had the chance to try a lot of different CBDs because we use it, and this was easily one of the best ones I've come across. And I was really impressed when I pulled up their site to begin with at the array of products they have. Even if they have CBD for horses, like, that's incredible. So I just want to throw that out there.
Hey, listen, it's been a hot topic, and it works. So give it a shout. Go to Curable, KURIBL.com. Check it out. Well, Bob, we're going to go back today. This is podcast episode 53. So we are well on our way to this in the second year of us working together. We're going to cover show number 183 from the archives today, which took place December 12th, 1992. We're going to feature part two of the interview with the British Bulldog. We'll have Bruno Sammartino promoting a special event involving Stromboli, and we'll leave it at that.
I can't wait to hear. I just want to mention this. This is our 53rd episode, dude. I mean,
it is.
So we really were last year, or last week really was the cutoff for 52, and here's 53. And
that's right.
Wow. They said it wouldn't last, kids. Here we are.
They said it wouldn't last.
It's not going to sound, but we keep getting back up, you know.
Well, you know, listen, we're here. We have an audience. People love what we do. We love covering the history. And speaking of history, today's show is also going to feature some clips from a young kid back in the day. His name was John Clark, and he did a newsletter called the Wrestling Flyer Newsletter that was really one of which that featured shoot interviews as the main focus of the bulletin, the newsletter that he did back then. And doing a recent search on John, who was from the Philadelphia area, the Flyer was, you know, his newsletter was called The Flyer. So obviously a big Philly fan, but he stayed in Philadelphia and he's become one of the top sportscasters. He works for the NBC affiliate in Philadelphia. I think it's called, I think it's Channel 10 up there. But I have reached out to him because I think it would be kind of cool to bring him on the show. I really just found him a few days ago on social media. He's all over, you know, he's on Twitter, he's on Instagram. But the Philadelphia Phillies have been in the World Series, and that's where he's been every night covering that. So hopefully John will see my messages, and I'd love to have him on the show. But anyway, Bob, let's get to episode 183 of the archives, which is episode 53 for this podcast.
And I'll tell you, this has got one of the best openings from you, John. The side of you, we don't know if often hear. You were ultra professional then. You're even more so now, but you're a little bit cranky on this one. A little bit, cantankerous, shall we say?
Okay.
You want to hear this clip? We'll see.
Let's go back in time and see what was going on with me.
30 years, y'all. Here we go.
I And now, WNYG Radio presents Pro Wrestling This Week. Now, here's your host, John Arizzi.
Is it cold enough for you out there? Made it in here about 3 minutes ago, and I don't even feel like being here today. I tell you, I just don't feel that good. Bruce, how are you doing in there? Bruce Jacobs makes it in here today. Weathering the storm out there. It's very bad weather, so I hope everybody's inside tuning their radio in to 1440 WNYG for another week of pro wrestling news right here at this illustrious radio station, the House on the Hill. And we are going to talk wrestling with you for the next hour.
What you folks who don't live in the New York metropolitan area may not know is we have some pretty hellacious winters here. And getting around, imagine just getting to the studio, even though you were close, John, must have been a chore.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes you an hour to do it, would usually take 5 minutes. I know that because I go from borough to borough every day in all kinds of weather. So was that the case for you on that night or that on that morning, I should say?
Well, probably the roads were not cleared. It was a bad storm, but I've never been friends with snow. Never. I mean, even as a kid, you know, you would run out and you go make a snowman or this and that. I just never liked snow, ice, being in it, seeing it. That was not my bag. And then I went to school in Boston. And I was in Boston 1975 to 1979, and I was there for the blizzard of 78. If everyone remembers, whoever, you know, is old enough to remember that. And it was in the dormitory. And unfortunately, during the blizzard of 78, I had a problem with a tooth that became abscessed. And there was no electricity. I had to walk to Mass General Hospital to get this thing drained. And walking in a blizzard that dumped about 30 inches of snow in Boston, I felt I was like going to die, even though the hospital was probably about a mile or so from the dorm. And all my friends in school used to laugh at me because they knew that I didn't know how to walk in snow. I'd fall down constantly. I'd take baby steps and I'd still fall and slip and fall. So that's my history with snow. That's why I'm in Tennessee. If there's a snowfall, it's going to melt in a day. I don't like it. Never did, never will.
Well, John, as you know, I'll put on my old voice here before I came to New York, and I used to live in upstate New York. And let me tell you, it was cold. And when you get in the New York metropolitan area, if you get 2 inches of snow, they had 2 feet where I'm from, mm-hmm. in the county. And I got to agree with you. I've had my share of snow being an upstater. And even around here in the winters, because, you know, nobody knows how to drive here in the snow. It's like, it's, you know, they don't slow down. They act like nothing's wrong and then pile ups on all the highways here. So I am not the biggest snow fan either. I've had my share. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, but you did what you had to do. You got into the studio. Okay. And apparently on time, but you also said you weren't feeling well.
No, I was coming down with something. I used to get sick a lot in the winter. The flu, the colds, all of that. I used to get it, and it would last because I really wasn't in the best of health. I was a chain smoker. Not a chain smoker, but I smoked, you know, maybe a pack of cigarettes every other day. My weight was really out of control. I mean, I was just not healthy,
well,
which is different today because I haven't really been sick. I had COVID in the beginning of January, end of January, I should say.
Right.
But I really haven't had a cold really since – before the pandemic hit. I mean, I don't get viruses, flus, colds. I just haven't. So anyway, that's what was going on with me. The snow, not feeling well, and just not into it that day.
And it's a change from your usual countenance, as they say. You just weren't, you're usually pretty upbeat, even when you weren't feeling well. I've been with you in the studio. There are days when you were harried, but once the light went on, you were ready to rock and roll. This time you said out loud, I don't even feel like being here today. Pretty rare for you, man.
Indeed, Bob. But we tough it out
we did it, and it wound up being a pretty good show.
But like they say, the show must be go on. I mean, in wrestling, anything could happen. They keep the show going on, as you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, as we always do here on our look back at the past, we have the Don Leibel's time capsule, which back then was the news capsule, as the walking wrestling encyclopedia. We'll come back, and he's got a pretty juicy one today. There's a lot going on at this point. Mm-hmm. In all the federations, he touches on a lot of different subjects here, including a pretty cool blast of the past at the end. Let's hear Don Leibel and his dulcet tones as he and John discuss what happened that week in wrestling history.
So what's going on?
Hey, lots going on. Let me get right to it. I'm getting all excited here. Okay, good morning, everybody. Well, Jerry the King Lawler was introduced this past week on the World Wrestling Federation's primetime show as a television commentator for the promotion. Lawler, based in Memphis, will co-host the Superstars program with Vince McMahon Jr. in a heel role, replacing Mr. Perfect, Curt Hennig, who is back on the road as a wrestler. Lawler is expected to remain with the United States Wrestling Association as well. Former wrestling television commentator Freddie Miller passed away a few weeks back. Miller, who resided in the Atlanta area, was calling matches on the superstation WTBS alongside Gordon Soley for Georgia Championship Wrestling, and WWF Telecast joined their short stint on WTBS. Freddie Miller was 63. Well, the Royal Rumble is shaping up like this. As we reported last week, Bret Hart defends his WWF title against Razor Ramon. Marty Jannetty challenges Shawn Michaels. The Big Boss Man is scheduled to take on Bam Bam Bigelow. And the Steiner Brothers will face the Beverly Brothers. Also, Elegante is expected, under another identity, of course, to be introduced at the Rumble as well. Promoter Dennis Carluzzo has announced a January 23rd I Quit match between Terry Funk and Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert in Philadelphia at the Radisson Hotel. Congratulations go out to the Honky Tonk Man as he and his wife welcomed a new addition to their family on November 24th, Megan Ferris.
It's happy birthday, Donnie.
Go out to wrestling Kangaroo Al Costello. He'll be 73 on Monday. And speaking of wrestling legends, get this, folks. Walter Killer Kowalski will once again be coming out of retirement for a match. The Killer will take on Nikolai Volkoff in Westwood, Massachusetts. That's a Boston suburb, on Saturday, January 9th. Earlier this year, you may remember, Kowalski wrestled John Tolis in Japan. Finally, 18 years ago this week in pro wrestling, it was in L.A.'s Olympic Auditorium. Chavo Guerrero defeated Ernie Ladd by DQ. And in Madison Square Garden before 20,000 people, Bruno Sammartino defeated Ivan Koloff in a steel cage match. And also on that same card, Antonio Inoki pinned Ernie Ladd. For Pro Wrestling This Week, I'm Don Leibel reporting. Capsule time, 10:10.
You know, Jerry Lawler, we talked about this previously, entering the WWF was a big honking deal. I mean, it really was. And you can see he was barely there when they gave him a commentary role. Mm-hmm. Somebody was thinking, because there's fewer guys with a quicker wit or better countenance on television than Jerry Lawler. Just brilliant move on their part.
He was a good fit. He was a natural fit, and he brought it.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with Kurt, Curt Hennig, and I remember him doing a pretty nice job too on color. Yeah. But Lawler was born to do that kind of thing, you know? And they had always looked for a replacement for Jesse Ventura. If anybody claimed close to Jesse, it was Jerry. No question about it. In a different kind of a way. And you know what? I consider them equals in terms of greatest color commentator of all time. I'm 1 and 1A, and you could.
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, and just place either one at number one or 1A because they were both excellent in their own individual styles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jesse really was the first heel commentator. And the best part about Jerry Lawler on color commentary is he started straight heel, and as time went on, he was like a hybrid. Sometimes he would side with whoever the villainous type was in the ring. Other times he would be a little more, right down the middle and rules oriented and whatnot. He kind of became himself after a while, which made him even better, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, just one of the unique talents in the history of the business, and he's still vibrant for his age, and everything that he does is just, I'm a big fan of his.
Me too. Still
huge, huge, huge fan of his. Well, you know, for patrons out there, you can hear this whole episode if you go to patreon.com/John Arezzi, because after the capsule, I had questions for Don about the Garden Show, Ultimate Warrior making an appearance, the Steiner brothers starting in the WWF, Hacksaw Jim Duggan leaving. So we had a great conversation. I talked about the 92 convention video and other big news about the Warrior actually doing some independent shots as well. So all of that, if you're a patron, you could hear the entire episode, patreon.com/John Arezzi. Then, of course, Bob, we always have a bunch of commercials that the patrons could hear. You know, these shows are unedited once you go up on Patreon. But commercials about a big appearance I was doing. Davey Boy Smith and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, which was added to that December 26th appearance at the Farmingdale Lanes and also Comac Lane. So we did two bowling alleys on the 26th. So we talk about that. We also then had a message from somebody, right?
Well, a certain ornery cowboy who never shuts up really wanted to give a holiday greeting, I think. Shall we go to that?
Let's do it.
Christmas, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Oh, howdy out there. Ho, ho, ho. You simple-minded idiots. You're listening to Terry Funk right here, and I do want to wish you exactly what I was singing to you, a very Merry Christmas.
Yes, we're back. That's my favorite Christmas promo, by the way, that Terry Funk one. Terry's just a classic individual.
I agree. Yeah, that's the goods right there.
that is my favorite one. That is my favorite one. I liked him, this one in Cornette's, but it definitely my favorite with Terry.
And there was another memorable one with Eddie Gilbert, as I recall.
Yes, there was. Yes. I wonder how many I have on those, because I still love Christmas. I still love the month of December, just so I could play those promos.
Boy, you know, you're talking about those bowling alley appearances. You had both Jim the Anvil and Davey Boy on the same. How did that must have been huge.
It was more Davey Boy who asked if he could bring Neidhart with him, because obviously they were family members, right? They were brother-in-laws.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Did you have time to promote that at all?
Well, yeah, this was December 12th. The show was December 26th. So this was our first announcement that Anvil was going to be with Davey Boy. And the response was immediate and it was big and it was exciting. And when I went to the guy who ran the lanes at Farmingdale and Comac, and he says, yeah, let's do it. Bring him in. And it made for a very special day after Christmas for a lot of wrestling fans, which we'll be covering in some future episodes coming up.
Sounds really cool. And one of the few things, I'm just reading those words, who was there, and I'm actually sorry I missed that one, because that one sounds, you know, as a bowler who likes wrestling, you know, it's the perfect mix there for somebody like me. So I never got to see any of your bowling alley stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, especially with your passion for bowling and your expertise as a top bowler in your league. And
don't go that far, please. I'm aging rapidly out there, my friend. It's not what it once was.
Once you start using Curable, you'll get better.
I think you're right, and I could probably bomb some up right now. But anyway. We're looking here at our notes, and Davey Boy Smith, who we just brought up, you hear the second part of his amazing interview.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you think about it, we're using the word shoot a lot, but, you know, his interviews in WWE were, well, Matilda and us, we're going to go out and get the bad guys and la-di-da. Here he really opens up. He didn't really talk about the business or anything inside at all up till this point that I know of, John. And forgive me if I'm wrong, but this is...
Yeah, I mean, he started getting really deep into it, especially
with everything that he'd gone through, the SummerSlam match, he thought it was great. It was just he left the WWF, and he was opening up in a way that really surprised me when I taped the interview with him. I didn't expect him to go, and the further he went, the further I would go to try to get even more stuff from him.
You know, I'm listening to him too. They used to work the tag team scene particularly pretty hard because, yeah, you know, they were running so many arenas, sometimes concurrently on the same day, yeah, that you'd have a tag team champions headline one card and the world champion would headline another card. And they were crisscrossing each other around the country, and it had to be tough. You know, it just did. I know, yeah, wrestlers still have a heart. They're great athletes and they work so hard, but I think the mid-80s WWF schedule was astounding. It was just work, 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 work.
Insane.
Yeah. It was insane. Really was. Tough on the body, tough on the mind, tough on the soul.
Yeah, and Davey, I mean, and he, you know, even that SummerSlam match, I mean, when he was telling us that he had gotten a staph infection in his knee and he wasn't 100%, and he still delivered. It was a 4-star match with his other brother-in-law, Brett the Hitman Hart. I mean, the family and all of that stuff. And, you know, so he believed that it was the best WWF show that there ever was up to that point, and it was the biggest thrill of his career.
I agree with that summation, particularly in that time period. That was a big, long, serious match that went over, yes, like busters at a time when they were just slowly changing with the advent of wrestlers like Ric Flair and, you know, people like that, and getting a little more serious again. But I think that was a real groundbreaking match, whether at the time the WWF wanted to admit it or not. Because, you know what? That was a good old school barbed burning wrestling match.
It was.
Out of the blue.
It was. Really? And it sold out Wembley Stadium. That match sold out Wembley Stadium.
And how about the reaction of the crowd?
It was amazing.
It was. It was. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, times like that, I remember watching that card and thinking, that's about as good as it gets. It's the kind of card you would shut it off and go, boy, I'm entertained. That was just what I wanted to see.
Yep.
I mean, everybody on it was just tremendous. It's just what they needed. But I'm assuming at this point, from the way things went down between Vince McMahon and Davey Boy,
yeah,
I don't think Vince gave it a lot of credence for whatever reason. I can't figure it out.
Well, you know, I don't think Vince ever really likes when a performer goes over so well. You know, he likes to knock him down a peg or two. So there was a lot of stuff. I mean, the complete interview, and everyone is going to be able to hear that complete unedited interview in its entirety on our YouTube channel as Marsh is working on that. And that I would advise everybody to listen to it from the beginning of it to the end of it, because there's so much that's covered, and we're only touching the surface, even with the clips that we're playing. But that was, for me at the time, one of those magic moments when you were talking to somebody with the notoriety of Davey Boy Smith, that you're getting stuff from him and inside information and what was going on behind the scenes with him and Vince and the WWF, and the press releases they were putting out that he was fired for unprofessional conduct. There was a lot of stuff going on that we kind of had a scoop on.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Nobody had an inkling, really. You know,
no. I mean, they announced it was unprofessional conduct. That's what they announced publicly when they parted ways.
Kind of vague. You know what I mean when I say that? I should say like this, pretty vague with the fingers in the air, because it's like,
exactly,
you know, what could he have possibly done? Yeah. Well, anyway, little predictions in this clip, and you'll hear how free and easy he is, Davey Boy Smith is with his information here. A really classic interview, probably in the top three, I think, in the history of your show, if you'd agree with that, John.
I would definitely put it up there.
Yeah.
I would definitely put it up there. It was probably top five for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
really, we have Warrior coming up in the beginning of the year when he leaves, and that is a good one too. That's going to be an eye opener for a lot of people.
I bet it will be. Holy smokes! So anyway, let's hear what the great legendary Davey Boy Smith has to say about what he thinks is going to happen in the wrestling business coming up.
Well, the wrestling business here in this country over the last couple of years has taken a lot of hits with the steroid scandals, with the other allegations in the WWF, with the dropping attendance. It hasn't been a very good time for wrestling here in the States. Looking at it from someone on the inside of the business, do you have any predictions or any thoughts on, you know, what the future of the wrestling business is here in the United States? And then maybe give us your opinions on what's going to happen overseas over the next several months.
I don't know what. I just hope for the WWF and even from, you know, as far as I go, that, you know, that they do well overseas in Europe, you know, and I think the wrestling will pick up and back up in the United States. There was that steroid scandal what the WWF went through. You know, it went way. I think it was blown. You know, actually way out of proportion. You know, there was a lot of things true and a lot of things what wasn't true. You know, as far as certain people went, but Vince, as far as I know myself, because I've been through it with the WWF, that Vince has one of the best steroid testing policies. Actually, I shouldn't just say steroids. That goes for any kind of drug, you know, steroids, marijuana, cocaine, you know, poppers, downers. He has the best policy right now, drug policy going. He has Dr. Mario Di Pasquale doing that from Toronto, and mm-hmm. He's one of the best docs in the world. He tests all the Olympians. And, you know, there's no way you can get around Vince's testing. If you pass the test, you pass it, and if you fail, you get suspended. It's as simple as that, you know, and he has, I don't think he has any favorites in the wrestling business. You know, it doesn't matter who you are.
Well, there was certainly a lot of heat put on the organization, you know, from this reporter included, when it went down, and a lot of people feel it did get out of proportion at some points, and, the business really seems to be cleaned up now regardless. It just seems to be that way as far as that problem. But, you know, it just each individual's own personal preference, and it did get out of proportion there for a while.
Yeah, it did, you know, and everything's, you know, as far as I know, it's back to normal with that now. You know, I mean, you know, Vince could stop right now and say, okay, I'm not going to test you guys no more, you know, if you want to do whatever you want to do, you know, but he's still got the drug policy going, which is good, because I think it makes everybody healthy, you know. You don't want to, I've never had the experience, but it would, you know, with going in the ring with somebody who's on some kind of drug, you know, and they don't know where they are or what they're doing,
yeah.
You know, and they're throwing your body around, they could actually kill you, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, it's keeping the that, so the aspect goes with the business of drugs, is it's keeping that, you know, really good.
Well, getting
I think down the line, if all the wrestlers are clean like that, I think there should be something for the wrestlers too, you know.
Yeah. Well,
WCW, if you're clean with them, that they give you 10 or 20% at the end of the year on your contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're clean with Titan, you don't get nothing at the end of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, looking at it, both sides of the fence, a lot of people felt, well, just the grueling schedules that especially Titan had, especially in the mid '80s, traveling double shots. You know, how could a lot of wrestlers stay away from some things that would tempt them?
Interesting stuff there, especially at the end when he said that WCW would bonus guys who remain clean. That was kind of fascinating to hear that.
News to me.
Yeah.
I had no.
Well, that was real inside information. I don't know if he was
That almost
knew for a fact.
That almost sounds like a Kip Fry era incentive.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like a Bill Watts incentive.
I could
be totally, you know, misfiring here, but.
Yeah. I mean, the other point he made, though, Bob, was the fact that McMahon had the best steroid testing policy with Dr. Mario Di Pasquale out of Toronto. And the thing about what McMahon used to do is that there was selective discipline. I mean, if you were in the doghouse, you could get suspended or you can get terminated for unprofessional conduct. So it was very selective, because he never made the results known if someone did test positive. It was all kept internal.
And that was his right as the guy who ran the company. But it was always like almost holding something over the guy's heads, like, all right, you're in the doghouse, so you're getting suspended, because you don't know how many guys really tested positive or negative. You don't know, because it was such a well-kept secret. And then when someone would get suspended, then I was like, what did he do to, you know, get in the doghouse, you know?
Well, all I know is, you know, the British Bulldogs tag team and Davey Boy by himself were really popular.
Yeah.
They were very popular. And I think having this dispute and letting him walk was a mistake. I think he should have stayed, and they should have exploited the fact that he did get over at SummerSlam and, you know, win the championship and everything that goes with it. I don't understand what happened at that point in history. It's still a little bit of a mystery, even though he explained it, but, you know, but it was a mystery because he's saying, you know, unprofessional conduct, right? When, where, how.
Yeah. What happened? What specifically happened? And he dives into a lot more of the problems. He dives into a lot more of the problems that centered around SummerSlam and the promotional stuff that he wouldn't permit Davey to do. There was a lot of stuff going on, which is in that complete uncut interview. So once again, I'm plugging that, and that'll be up for our YouTube channel imminently.
Yeah, it's a must listen, guys. You really need to hear this from beginning to end. And like I said, at the time period when this happened, you didn't hear stuff like this a whole lot, particularly on radio show. So.
No, you did not.
You know, so this was a biggie.
It was.
But you know who else was a biggie? The great Bruno Sammartino.
My hero.
Everybody's hero. And yeah. You know what? Just in my meetings with him, how do I put it? You watch a guy who's larger than life your whole life on television. Like I said, I never had the opportunity to see him perform live, but I saw many of his matches, of course. And I bought $1,000 VCR to tape the match he had with Larry Zbyszko off TV because I knew it was going to be classic. I could feel it in my bones. And to finally get to meet him around 82, 83, or 84. I can't remember the year. I'm bad with my
92.
Yeah, I was there from 88, so probably, 88, 89. I met him early on because he would visit often. And I'll tell you.
Did he ever come up to the office?
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
Sure. Even after we got along famously, they were really, really good friends. They really, legit. Because, you know, Bill was covering Bruno back in the early 70s when he started with them, I believe, in 71 for Stanley Weston's magazines before they expanded. And they always hit it off, and they were really tight. And but you know, even after that, well, you know, talking to him backstage at certain events and at WCW when he refereed the match at Halloween Havoc and all that stuff, what a great freaking guy he was. I mean, you know, you talk to him for 5 minutes, you feel like you've known him for 10 years. One of those guys. Would you agree with that? Or
totally. I mean, one of the easiest guys to talk to. And it was the most ironic thing was like all those years that I was at ringside covering the Garden and covering his title defenses and being backstage and even taking photographs. I never talked to him. I was afraid to talk to him. I just felt like it's Bruno. How do I talk to him? And it wasn't until I started Pro Wrestling Spotlight on commercial radio in 1989 that I had that first conversation with him. And we developed a friendship and then booked him for my very first convention and talked to him all the time. And he appeared on the show a lot. But in the beginning, it was kind of like, this is Bruno, man. I don't know if I could even go up to him and say hello. I mean, I would never forget another little story. I mean, back from the 70s, because after the show at the Garden, everyone would go to the Savoy Bar, which is across the street from the Edison Hotel on 47th Street, and Bruno would come in, and they'd put, you know, usually with Georgie Ann, and everyone parted like the Red Sea, and he'd have his table in the back. But just the fact that he was sitting there, and I'd peek over and see Bruno sipping on a beverage and
talking in his suit, always wore in a suit, with Georgie Ann and some other friends there. I mean, it was just kind of like, for me, there he is, the living legend. He's there. And then getting to know him and talk to him and do business with him, probably one of the most heartwarming for me things in my history in pro wrestling was the fact that I got to know this man.
Yeah, and at the time we got to, you know, to work with him, I mean, there was no bigger star up till Hogan, really, in terms of the East Coast. And Bruno was beloved like no wrestler I've ever seen. Like I said, just listen to the heat on a Madison Square Garden match anytime. Just him walking down the aisle would
hit
the roof. Like no wrestler ever. I mean, it was, and there was no music. There was no pyro. You just see him go come through the curtain and boom, the crowd
would roar.
And you know why? Because he was him. He was, you know, we all know we're professional wrestling with, but Bruno Sammartino was Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah.
You know, what he was doing in the ring may have been, you know, predetermined. But Bruno Sammartino, the man, when he talked, he meant what he said. And I think I respected him for that every day he ever worked.
Yeah, what a big loss when we lost him a few years ago. And but, it, you know, in this appearance, I mean, it's kind of a little bit unusual because it really is not diving into wrestling, but it was diving into an appearance that he was about to make. And it was out of the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can't wait to hear his voice. Hey, it's the only Larry Zbysko, the only living legend in professional wrestling, Bruno Sammartino.
To the program, the living legend himself, Bruno Sammartino, who'll be appearing next week at Home Run's next big baseball card and comic book show. First of all, I want to welcome you to the program again, Bruno. How you doing?
Thank you, John. Very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Oh, just hanging tough tonight. Big storm here on Long Island, and I understand you over there in Pittsburgh got hit with a lot of snow also.
Only about 20 inches.
Has that been like the biggest storm that you folks have faced there in a while?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the biggest one they're saying since around 1950-51. That's the year I came from Italy, so
wow.
It's been a long time.
Same here on the island. Things are very, very hectic here right now, but the fans are out there this morning enjoying the pro wrestling show, and next Saturday is the event, and of course, another one of the great baseball card shows put on by Home Run. The last one featured Nikolai Volkoff, and this time, next Saturday, December 19th, legendary wrestler, the living legend, Bruno Sammartino, and Bruno, do you look forward to these things?
Yeah, I really do, because, you know, this one is actually in Brooklyn, and, you know, I remember early on in my career, I used to wrestle in a place called the Brooklyn Rollerama.
Wow.
And, gosh, I met a lot of great people there. There used to be at a Bruzzi Club right across from the Rollerama that I used to stop to say hello to all those paisans. But Brooklyn was always kind of great. The fans were always so great, and I haven't been there in a long time. So I really am looking forward to it on the 19th to make an appearance there, and hopefully get to see a lot of the fans from yesteryear and some of the present ones, you know. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, of course, also as a special, I guess, Christmas present, holiday gift for everybody, Bruno, you have a tradition and a custom of not charging for your autograph, and of course, autographs of the living legend, Bruno Sammartino, will be free next weekend.
Yeah, it's, I don't criticize nobody for what they do, because they, you know, what goes on in baseball and other sports. It's just something that I've not felt comfortable with. I always felt that the fans, throughout my career, they're the ones who made me a star. They buy tickets and coming to see you wrestle, and hopefully they enjoyed what they saw. But now, when they come to see me wherever I appear, it's always great to see them, and I just wouldn't feel comfortable that they should be charged for my autograph, so I don't go for that.
Well, there'll be a big turnout next week, and once again, it's going to be taking place at St. Mary of the Snow. That's located at 410 Graham Avenue, the Greenpoint section of Brooklyn, and the show will take place beginning at 10 a.m. next week. And do you know when your appearance will be specifically? Is it going to be mid-afternoon or early afternoon?
Ah, boy, I think I'm going to be there from 12 to 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, 12 to 3. For further information, fans out there, if you'd like to get directions and get more information, just call Richie at this number, 718-386-4426. That number again, 718-386-4426. And, of course, there'll be a lot of memorabilia tables, a lot of baseball cards, old baseball cards, and there'll be even a couple of wrestling memorabilia tables there as well. And, of course, you get to meet the living legend, Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, I want to thank you for coming on with us today to talk about his appearance next week, and I want to wish you happy holidays to yourself and your family.
Well, same to you, John, and all your listeners out there, and I hope that I get to meet a lot of fans on the 19th. Really looking forward to it, John. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, the complete interview can be heard on patreon.com/JohnArezzi, because I think we talked a little bit about him judging the Stromboli eating contest or something, and the other thing that was kind of
the Stromboli thing was early on. So when you opened it up and you were cranky, you said Bruno's coming on because he's going to be part of a Stromboli eating contest and he's joining it. And then you just started laughing. You said,
that was a rib.
It was a rib you had made on the show.
I was making a rib about Bruno. I must have been in a bad mood.
Yeah.
And you came up with Stromboli eating contest.
He said it was in Brooklyn. And then he asked, I forget the name of your producer who had just come back. Bruce
Jacobs.
Wow.
You took a shot at Bruce as well for not knowing what Stromboli was. So
I was in a cranky, ornery mood looking at the snow out there. And it kind of ironic that this appearance was going to be at St. Mary's of the Snow when I heard him say that.
That's funny. I just want to point this out real quick, just because working on the show has me like so engrossed in the history of it all so much now. Yeah. One of my friends I grew up watching wrestling with, he's in the middle of moving, so he gave me my Christmas present early. He got me a foam gold eagle belt signed by Bruno, because he goes, "You've been talking about Bruno so much lately." Yeah, there's a little picture of him signing it.
Oh, like, look at that.
Yeah, I was kind of like, whoa. And he's like, "I don't know if you have a Bruno yet." And I was like, "I don't, but now that's a cool piece." So I can thank you guys for having me talk about him so much now.
Cool. Legit. Particularly legit, man. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bruno was, like I said, I mean, I had lots of autographs of his. And my, I guess one of my prize autographs of Bruno was an original print when he had just beat Buddy Rogers in 1963, May 17th at Madison Square Garden. And there's a picture of him getting the belt, and he signed that to me. And that's one of my most treasured artifacts.
Is that the famous picture where he's being handed the belt and you see Buddy kind of rolling sideways on his mat?
That's the one holding his side. Yeah, that's the one.
Very famous photo. Great photo, too, because it tells the whole story.
It does.
Even if you didn't see the mat. Yeah, I know I'm sitting here listening to Bruno, and I hate to be corny, but boy, oh boy, do I miss that stuff.
Me too.
What I miss those days, you know. It's just it had a flavor that you don't get anymore. I'm not saying today's wrestling is better or worse. I won't say that tonight, but I will say that for those of us who lived it, there was nothing like it. And you felt like if you weren't in a card like at MSG, I know John, I could vouch for him. You felt like you missed something, right, John? And you didn't miss.
Oh, yes. That's why I didn't miss a show from August 30th, 71, right through 77.
Inadvertent plug for your podcast,
Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden. Yeah. I mean, that was, I couldn't miss a show. I mean, and I felt when I missed that first Garden show, because I was at college and I was working and I couldn't get back and forth to the Garden every month. And that was the end of it, really. My consecutive streak was over. I felt terrible, and I, there was no internet, and there was no, you know, I just felt like that whole night that I, like my life was over because I missed a Garden show, after 5 years of going to every single one and not missing one.
Well, I always tell the story about how I felt as a teenager. I had to watch our local wrestling show at WWF on Channel 6 WRGB in the Albany area. And it was at the same time as church every Sunday. And the arguments I had with my folks, I need to stay home. There was something inside of me that said, I have to see these programs. I can't not watch this. And it created quite a row in my household. And I eventually, somehow they acquiesced. Really was true. If I hadn't watched all those shows and been so up on it and stayed up to date on it, I never would have been a wrestling writer all these years later. There's no question about that in my mind. Something inside me said, you've got to watch this show. Mm-hmm. You got to see Bruno Sammartino. You got to see Pedro Morales. You got to see Killer Kowalski. You got to see it. You have to watch it. And my intuition was correct, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely it was.
But you and I aren't unique. I think a lot of fans felt that way. They had to see it every week. You felt you missed something big if you didn't see your favorite shows or your favorite cards. No question about it.
Yeah. Well, it certainly shaped our lives.
Sure it did. Oh, my goodness.
I think it shaped the lives of a lot of people who listen to this show as well.
We're probably talking, preaching to the choir. Like, we have our Patreon Zoom conferences once a month.
Yes. And
you could feel from the crowd that we talked to that they have a very similar vibe about how they felt wrestling when they were teenagers or even younger. And you know, we're all kindred spirits, I think. We're all.
That's very true.
Fans. You know, I was always a glorified fan, no matter what I was doing. You know, even as the magazines, we're all glorified fans, really.
Yeah. That is true. Well, you know, we go into the next segment on the show, and kind of the next generation of journalists was really starting out. Dave Meltzer was embedded, and he was, you know, had the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Wade Keller, Steve Beverly, and then the second wave started coming in, and this young man, John Clark, is part of that second wave, and I was really impressed with his work. And I wanted to bring him on the show, not just to talk about the wrestling flyer, but he just had released an interview with Jake Roberts, who was in a halfway house at the time. You know, Jake, that's Jake. And he was doing some really, for the time, amazing shoot interviews in print with some of the biggest names of the business. But he also, I mean, one of the first guys to kind of take the idea of what I was doing, like the Weekend of Champions convention, and decided as a young man that he was going to do his own convention in that market. And, you know, I was never one not to promote even somebody who was doing a convention because I felt, hey, listen, even though I started them, these are the things that the fans enjoy. And so I gave John Clark some time. He was doing a convention that he's putting together, Sid Vicious, Road Warriors, Terry Funk, Kerry Von Erich, Kevin Sullivan, Woman, Davey Boy Smith, Ultimate Warrior also, which I don't think happened. I don't think Warrior actually showed up, or he didn't, because Warrior was so difficult. When we start covering what I went through with Warrior next year on the show and with my IWAS tour of Southeast Asia, that's when his true colors come out. But anyway, I think we have some clips with John Clark from the Wrestling Flyer. Did you know John before we get to those? Did you ever meet John or get to know John Clark at all?
I'll be bloody honest with you, my friend. Not only have I not met John, I've never seen I never saw the newsletter, not even once. I don't really know how good. I read everything. But this one is an escape. Well, you know what it is? He was probably getting in while I was getting out.
Yeah, definitely around the same time. But
I will say this. At that era, we're struggling to sell magazines. Ratings are down. Attendance is down. But things like your show and the newsletters were piping hot. I mean, it was really the super growth period for the wrestling newsletters right at about that time. It's an oxymoron, but I think that fans wanted to get the inside scoop really bad, and they saw that door cracking open a little bit.
Yeah.
They dove right into it.
They did. They did. And John was on the forefront of these shoot interviews. He and Wade Keller both did them, but John really did some fascinating and in-depth interviews. And it doesn't surprise me that this young man has done what he has done now and accomplished so much in his career. And now he's, like I said, top sportscaster for the NBC affiliate in Philly, and very happy for him. So why don't we go to a clip and hear what young John Clark had to say in our conversation.
Now, getting Sid, what is his status right now with the WWF? Is he signed till May, I believe, right?
What happens, he's able to work some dates. I don't know his exact situation. He signed a contract with us to be here. I know that he is still having problems with the WWF regarding, you know, his WrestleMania paychecks and everything like that. And you know, they're giving him a very hard time, and right now he's not really able to go out and make a living because of his contractual obligations to them. But I think he's really looking forward to getting back. I mean, he really is looking forward to getting back in the ring, just not with WWF. I'm sure he'll end up with WCW in the very, very near future,
mm-hmm.
Next year. I mean, the WWF has given him a very hard time with his contract, letting him out of his contract and everything.
Yeah, we've spoke to him several times, and he's always saying, well, I can't do nothing yet, as far as wrestling. And
yeah.
Well, he'll be at the Legends of Wrestling convention, but the signing of, as they're calling him in Bill Wickham, Massachusetts, on the independent shows up there, the man that used to be known as the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, formerly known as the Ultimate Warrior. I guess it's a tough situation with him because, you know, he can't wear the face paint, you know, that had the Ultimate Warrior emblem. He can't wear any trunks or anything like that, and you can't use any pictures for advertising with that. And you can't also advertise him as the Warrior or the Ultimate Warrior. I guess you have to say formerly the Ultimate Warrior. So it's tough with him, and I guess he's having a tough time as well legally with the WWF.
Yes. And, of course, that night, the first night of the convention, Saturday night, January 23rd, there's also going to be a live wrestling show. Is that taking place right at the ballroom at the Radisson?
Yeah, it's going to be... it's going to be right there where the convention is. You know, I guess you only have to move 10 feet for the wrestling match. And it's going to be a joint card with Dennis Corluzzo's WWA and Todd Gordon's ECW. I guess they're going back here, back and forth here in Philadelphia about who has the better promotion. But the main event, as far as I was told by the promoters, is supposed to be Terry Funk versus Eddie Gilbert in, I guess, a rematch of the Wayne, New Jersey show. And then there's going to be title matches between wrestlers from the two different organizations. I guess they're not going to unify them, but they're just going to try to see who's the better of the promotions. And then Todd Gordon and Dennis Corluzzo are going to second their champions as the Spider meets the Sandman.
Okay, and that's kind of a unification type of title match there.
Yeah, well, it should be interesting because I guess it's never been done before. As you know, I mean, with Joel Goodhart before Dennis Corluzzo, there was a lot of heat between them.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think promoters can really get along together.
I haven't seen two that have been able to work together.
Yeah, and, you know, whether it's legit or not, I mean, the promoters really have a problem. I think every promoter really has a problem with each other. And I think when Dennis and Todd were going back at each other with comments, I think some of their true feelings were brought out, whether it's out of jealousy or, you know, of the other's promotions or what. But it should be very interesting.
That's some fascinating stuff there, too, with Todd Gordon and Dennis Corluzzo kind of working together on this show that was going to take place during this Wrestling Fans Convention. And, yeah, I mean, that was kind of a precursor to all the stuff that happened when the NWA and the tournament and what happened at ECW back at, this is 19, we go into 1994. So this was festering, and this was an interesting conversation just to hear about Corluzzo and Todd Gordon.
Yeah.
Actually working together.
From Pro Wrestling USA to Super Clash 3 to the USWA, and then promoters can't work together. It never works out. Now, I don't really know the story of why they kind of joined forces. I get the feeling that maybe that was a semi work, you know, create a rival faction and maybe get the fans from each place riled up somehow. Like, our
people, yeah.
Jersey wrestling's no good, Philly wrestling is better, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did that in, for a while in Memphis. around this period with Memphis versus Tennessee when USWA was promoting both areas. Eric Embry. Interesting. You're right. That was pretty meaty.
Yeah, it definitely was. And we continue on. You can hear the whole interview if you go to patreon.com/John Arezzi. That entire show is up for you to hear in its entirety, including all the commercials, the plugs of the newsletter, and other comments that I made about getting some of the other guests that were going to be on John Clark's convention on the show. And then, of course, Bob, you know, the mainstay of Pro Wrestling Spotlight since its inception, we're always the callers.
The bread and butter.
The bread and butter of the show.
That's right. Every show, no matter who was on, no matter who the guests were, how famous they were, how much time they took up, you made time for the fans.
I love that. Yeah, look, I always did.
They loved it too.
Yeah.
And you know they loved it because you have the same callers trying to get through every week. They'd be disappointed if they couldn't get through on the phone.
Yeah. And it's a slew of callers we have on this show, but we'll play a couple of them here. This first one, of course, a regular caller, Mike from College Point, in reality, Mike Johnson, who has become one of the, we say it every time we hear, and we mention his name, we say it, one of the top wrestling journalists in this business today.
You're so proud of that, too. I can tell that you're like a proud papa about his career, the way he...
Yeah, it was just not as proud as I was when I brought Vince Russo in.
Oh, man. He had to bring that up.
It's part of my history.
Really, we haven't mentioned Vince Russo in like about a month. That's pretty cool. Things were, now, at this point, were things calming down or are they going to get worse?
Well, with Russo, it was never good until – it wasn't ever good until Thanksgiving 2018 when I decided to reach out and confront him. And so things are good now. It's a peaceful detente. And, you know, we chat about baseball when he reaches out to me on Twitter or sends me a message or an email. So – But let's go to Mike from College Point, Mike Johnson, and hear his question and comments for this particular show, which was on December 12th, 1992.
Let's go to Mike from College Point. Mike.
Yeah, I'm a good man. How are you?
How are you doing?
A little wet, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable out there.
How'd you survive yesterday?
I stayed in the house. Been under the weather all week, so...
Question, are you running a bus trip to the WCW show up in Philly?
The December 29th show?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, what are the prices for the Clark convention? Do you know yet?
For the convention and the card, it's probably going to be in the vicinity between $65 and $75, which includes ticket to the show, admission to the convention, early admission, the bus, and whatever else we decide to bring along.
Okay, so... What's the deal with Lawler? Is he going to be staying or?
Lawler's in. He's going to be co-hosting Wrestling Superstars with Vince and also on that primetime every week.
Is he on the road?
Don't know if he's going to be full time on the road or not, but
yeah, because I'd really like to see him at one of the house shows.
Yeah, he's going to be making the rounds.
Okay.
You know what I liked about that clip? The classic AM radio background noise.
Yeah.
Right, you can, you know, if another station's trying to come in a little bit there, you're not quite.
I heard some frequency stuff. Yes,
we had so many stations here in this area that between Long Island and New York, sometimes you'd have to really make sure that your dial was tuned in perfect to get that signal right. If you can imagine this, guys.
Yeah, and WNYG was almost like ham radio.
Oh man, you're tough on them. Wow.
Well, it was a reality. Thank goodness it was in the daytime, because at night you would have heard probably about 18 different languages from 18 different stations bleeding onto 1440 AM when we went down to 10 watts. 10 watts, Bob. You know, that's not a lot.
My electric shaver has more watts than that.
I know.
I will say this. When you really wanted to hear a radio program like yours, you would fidget with your radio until you got it just right. And like you said, you had people standing outside making human antennas out of themselves.
Yeah. Andrew Goldberger did that. And then, of course, Pete from Eatontown would take rides in his car to find the right spot to pick it up and get pulled over by the cops because he was sitting, you know, in a parking lot by himself trying to pick the show up. But yeah, those listeners were very loyal. And that's why it'll be a pleasure when we head back to WEVD, which is really not too far in the future now, as we'll be discussing that more and more as the weeks progress here. So on that show, you know, we plugged Meltzer coming on to talk about some of the year-end stuff. We had callers, Bobby from Holbrook, asking about Hulk Hogan, Jason from Northport. We talked about the bowling league starting up. And then, of course, we got another call, Tito from Parts Unknown, Brendan from Rockville Center. And then to end it all, Bob, we do hear from the king of rock and roll, the prince of rock and roll, 42-inch waistline and all, the one and only Mickey B.
Oh, man. The more I'm learning about Mickey B, the more I wish I had more exposure to him. He sounds like one of a kind. He really does. He had that Long Island flavor, man. He knew how to play here in this region where I'm sitting right now. And he was, you know what I liked about him? There were a lot of guys who were a lot of bluster when it came to the rock and roll scene, you know, all the club promoters and whatnot. But Mickey seemed like he was legit. He was the real deal.
He was. He was. And it was great to precede his show because I'd get to see him every Saturday. So let's go to this clip with Mickey B, the Prince of Rock and Roll.
And then the Prince of Rock and Roll will be in to entertain you for the next 3 full hours. And Mickey, who do you got coming on today?
Well, today we had, you know, Julius Dixon, the gentleman who wrote Lollipop, you know, the song Lollipop. But, of course, Julius comes from the Brooklyn area, so they're flooded, you know, and he's a gentleman that's a little bit older on, you know, so we didn't expect him to come out. But Julius is going to call us and also be my guest in a couple of months. He's going to come back.
Sounds great. Of course, if you haven't heard Mickey B's Jukebox review up to this point, I would recommend, especially in this cold, snowy, rainy day, that you check him out. And you'll become hooked.
Yes, indeed. You become hooked listening to Mickey B's Jukebox review and what a show it was.
I mean what I say. If we can't, I have some friends in low places here in Long Island, and maybe I can pitch the idea of having Mickey B inducted into the Long Island Music Hall of Fame.
Well, Bob, if you could get that done, I'm sure Mickey will be smiling down from heaven.
I'm going to work on this, and I may have to include you in this because you knew him so well.
Well, we'd have to integrate my sister.
Yes, absolutely.
Long Island girl who, you know, just...
I will say publicly here, in this election year, I am going to campaign for Mickey B.
There you go, Bob. That is a mission that is certainly endorsed.
Yes,
1,000%.
I promise you I'm going to follow up on this as soon as I talk to a couple of people. I will be back in touch with you and the listeners here. We'll see if we can get a ball rolling on that. Of course, it's up to the board of directors. It's a good organization. They've got everybody who's ever been involved in Long Island music, and I'm sure they'll remember them as I just bring the name up.
Well, good luck with that, Bob. We'll be waiting to hear like updates.
Yeah, we'll see.
Your quest. That would be a wonderful thing.
Inspired. I am absolutely inspired by learning about this man and what he accomplished. And geez, the Cyndi Lauper thing alone, man. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And we'll be getting into it more with his, he was instrumental. He was the catalyst for getting me back on EVD. So we'll be going over that in future weeks. We close the show out with one last call. Ken from East Rockaway. He was asking what happened to the EVD show and what's going on with the newsletter. So we answer his questions and we wrap it up for this week. So another one in the books, Bob.
Another one bites the dust, as Freddie Mercury once sang.
Exactly.
I enjoyed this one. I particularly enjoyed Bruno. I'm sorry. He was such a warm and sincere fella. When he said please and thank you, he meant it.
No, yes, he did. Very sincere.
He said he was going to be there. He was always there on time. Just a total professional in every way you'd want him to be. A role model for real. Legit role model. I mean, who's a better role
model? Absolutely. And every person who met him at any of these autograph sessions and any time we ever had him for an appearance, he treated each and every person with kindness, respect, and adoration for them for being fans of his. So he was one of a kind, and we miss him dearly. Marsh, another one in the books here, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some good stuff on there, too, for the Patreons. Like you were talking earlier about how much you like doing the Christmas messages. At the end of the Bulldog interview, which is going to be the full one, you try and get him to do one. The tape cuts at a certain point, but you're trying to get him. He's writing it down, the name of the station and everything.
Oh, okay. So
the interview ends with you pitching one, yeah.
That's a little bonus material.
Yeah, and then also you give in between each caller here, I thought about making a clip of just between callers because of how much you're kind of ragging on the station for only having one line and how much you want to get to a bigger station.
Yeah, that was a pet peeve of mine. And, you know, there was a way to kind of conference two or whatever. I mean, it was just very difficult. It was not my favorite place to be. It did feel like home in a lot of ways when I went back there after the EVD loss of the show. But it had its limitations, severe limitations,
yeah.
Signal-wise, technology-wise. And technology was rudimentary when you're talking about just a bank of phones to answer calls. And it was what it was.
I do have a question for you based off something earlier, because you mentioned that you got Bruno to sign that picture that you took, right?
Yeah. I didn't take that photo. No, I was only six when that 1963.
Oh, I thought it was one that you had.
No. I was born in 57. I was 6 years old. But that's an original print.
I wonder who took that photo.
Hold on.
Yeah.
You know, you guys converse among yourselves while I get it.
Hey, Mark, you wonder who took that photo.
I wonder who took it, too. I was just going to ask because
Sean is wearing. I mean, really?
When I met Hacksaw Jim Duggan, I had him sign a photo I had taken of him in high school that I was able to get printed out.
There it is.
That's really cool. Have you ever gotten anybody to sign one of the ones that you took? Or by that time, were you kind of not?
No, I wasn't doing that shit.
Was it frowned upon?
He's like, I wouldn't have, Mark.
You know, that's a good question, though. Would that be frowned upon as a ringside photographer to even ask somebody to do that? Because I know, as a sports writer, you don't ask for autographs, man. That's verboten at any major league. Yeah.
No, I did that at the conventions. I always had pictures signed for me. And what I've done mostly is I've sold them all. Mm. All of those pictures that were signed to me. And even some of the checks from the conventions and the endorsed checks, I auctioned all of that shit off on eBay and stuff over the course of the years, which I wouldn't do if I had to do it all over again, because I never thought I'd be getting back in the wrestling business. You know, when I put all this stuff up there, I mean, realizing now what this stuff is worth and what it goes for, I mean, endorsed checks by Buddy Rogers and Ric Flair and
gravy.
You know, selling them for, you know, whatever the bidders wanted for. I think someone reached out to me on my Facebook page I got the Flair and the Rogers endorsed checks, and they might have paid maybe a couple $100 for them. And who knows what they're worth right now?
Yeah. So yeah, that's crazy.
Anyway, I mean, that's what you do. I mean, when you don't think something has a value to it, you think you'll never be back in the business, and didn't realize the explosion of the collectibles market. I have so much stuff. If I had it today, it would be, you know, a really cool collection to have.
Here's a question for both of you guys. Okay. Marsh and John Arizzi. What is your A1 top piece of memorabilia that you consider your grail that you finally got your hands on? Do you have anything like that?
I'd be hard pressed to not say my Andy Kaufman autograph.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't as sentimental as some of the stuff I have. Like meeting Bret Hart, he signed the glasses. That means an awful lot, how that came about and stuff. And getting Hacksaw to sign that photo I took when I was 16 and getting it printed out, and that's a lot of sentimental. But like the one piece where it's all like, hey, the house is on fire, I'm probably grabbing that Andy Kaufman autograph.
Yeah, I could see that.
I had a Holy Grail, which I also sold, which was a autographed group photo of the Beatles.
Holy smoke. Wow.
I bought it for about $3,000. There's the Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
he'd
a keeper.
Sign the top. Yeah. That's he'd sign the top of one of the Playboy articles they wrote on him.
Yeah. So the Beatles thing, I mean, that's all I ever wanted. You know, all my life was an autographed picture of the Beatles, and I got one that was authenticated by a guy named Frank Ciazzo, which was the Beatles, you know, the expert Beatles authenticator, and bought it, framed it, had it in my house. And once I got fired from the record company in 2013, and then when my income went from, you know, really good six-figure income to zippity-doo-dah, I mean, you know, I lasted, you know, for a year or so financially. Okay. I was on the road with one of the artists making some dough. And then 2014, I have back surgery and I'm out of work and I'm not even earning a living. I didn't make a dollar in 2015. I didn't make a penny, like zero income. And, you know, went through savings and then I was like, well, what can I do to make money? And that Beatles picture I sold, you know, I bought it for three and change and I sold it for over seven. You know, I had a wonderful Rolex watch that I had to get rid of. And I had some Mets championship rings. And that sustained me for about 2 years. Just the stuff that I had collected while I was making big money.
You had all four signatures on that photo.
Yes. All of them. Yeah. It was from 1963. Uh-huh.
Wow. I'm floored. That's like a holy grail. How many people say they've even come close to anything like that?
No, I mean, it was like something I had wanted to do. And like I said, I was investing in a lot of stuff in the early 2000s. Once I moved to Nashville and got that big job with Great American Country and all the revenue I brought in and the commissions and the salary and, you know, I had a good run, 15 year nice run from end of the 90s when I left wrestling right through 2014. And you can't get back into the workplace because, you know, over 50 and no one's giving you a shot. And I'm doing little consulting jobs. But that 1 year in 2015 was freaking, that was the year that everything collapsed. And then, you know, 2016 got a little bit better. But, you know, I've been an entrepreneur since then, you know. So it's like life is a roller coaster as it is, you know. And I wish I had that stuff. And I had two curio cabinets filled with Mets merchandise and collectibles. And I was doing that for my nephew and, you know, to give it to him. And then, you know, and then at the end of the day, it's like, Uncle, I just really want the chairs from, you know, your seats from Shea Stadium, which I bought when they tore the stadium down. All right, Dominic, here you go. And those tickets from Johan Santana's no-hitter.
Wow.
But, of course, during those years, I had got – the kid probably has about 200 autographed baseballs that I would just spoil the heck out of them. He called me Uncle Genie. He calls me Uncle Genie to this day. He doesn't even call me Uncle Johnny. He calls me Uncle Genie or just Genie because I granted wishes for him. Mm. So anyway, I mean, but that's what it was. And I'm, you know, I had it. You know, what do I regret it? What can you do? I'm 65. What are you going to do now? Yeah. You look at this stuff and it's great to have, but I did have it and now it's not there no more.
Mm. But you know what? What you did is logical. First of all, a couple of things I want to express. Number one, the time you spent in the music industry, as somebody, you know, I was in it too. That's an eternity. The music industry is so transient. Like if you recorded for, let's say, MCA Records and you think everything's going fine, they'll hire a new manager of operations and everybody's out in the street.
Exactly.
That can happen within a year or 18 months. You, on the other hand, were at least had the longevity of how many years was that?
Well, I mean, GAC, well, you know, once I left wrestling in November of 90, once I kind of had a rude awakening and I decided I have to get out of the wrestling because I'm going to die. I was about to turn 40. I was 39 years old and, I was bankrupt and I was in a bad place physically, mentally, everything else. And then I didn't have a car. Didn't have anything. And then saw a little ad in a newspaper in Newsday for an account executive for the new country music station on Long Island, WMJC. Went in and applied for the job. And I knew the general manager. And he looked at me and he was like, John, how can I hire you? Because I was, you know, almost 400 pounds. I wore these dark glasses. I had a purple sports coat. And the sales manager there, this woman, Barbara Ravenette, we'll never forget her and we'll be indebted to her for life. She said, Tony, why don't you just give him a shot? Why don't you just give him a shot? I said, yeah, Tony, give me 30 days. And then he gave me the shot and I made some sales immediately with the country station. I had a passion for country music and got salesman of the month the following month. Mm-hmm. And then he loaned me money to get a car. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, 1997 was good. 1998 was better. Then I got hired away to work for the New York City country station, Y107, big city radio. And I became their director of music marketing and started visiting Nashville. So 98 was a great year. 99 was a better year. And then I get hired away to open up the Great American Country offices in Nashville in July of 2000 with a starting salary of $135K. So, and every year was just incredible, you know, and then, you know, I leave GAC to go work for the Pegula family who owned the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres, Black River Entertainment, to manage Sarah Darling there and to be their head of marketing, their vice president, and stayed there for 3 years, brought in Kelsey Ballerini, who's become one of the biggest artists in today's landscape. But I was fighting with my boss over the lack of effort on their radio promotion staff to get her on country radio. And I said some things I shouldn't have said, and I got canned. And then Sarah Darling left with me, and we went on the road to promote a single that we self-financed. And then I had back surgery in 14, and then she kind of let me go because her career was then stand still. So, I mean, it's, you know, that's life. You know, what are you gonna do? It's all in my book, by the way, Matt Memories.
Yeah. You should write a book.
But you know what? Parallel to what you're selling your Beatles photo and other memorabilia that you really were fond of to what the old artists are doing now with their songwriting catalogs.
They're selling them for big money.
Simon and all these guys are selling their publishing away for like
hundreds of millions of dollars.
But they're old. You know, they'll never live to see all that. They're taking what they could get now.
Yeah.
And laughing all the way to the graveyard to be right. Honest with you, you know.
Right.
In a way, it makes perfect sense and they started doing it during the pandemic because they couldn't tour.
Yep.
They couldn't work. Particularly older artists, nobody's going to play the records, you know, when you have a gray hair, you know. So they found a way to stem the tide of financial ruin by giving away the past.
Yeah. Hey, I was lucky I had all that stuff. Yeah. I really was. Yeah. I really was. Yeah. And it wasn't like, and it wasn't even like remorseful when it had to go. The Beatles, maybe. That would have been something I would have liked to have to this day. The Beatles. Everything else is just stuff to me.
Yeah.
And who knew I was going to find in 2018 when I sold my house, my wrestling archives. Who knew?
Because
if I didn't find that stuff, if I had 1-800-JUNK take those other boxes that said wrestling on them and throw them out, we wouldn't be doing this today.
Was finding that the inkling to get
that
this?
It was like, all right, 2018. I mean, that was kind of like, I looked and I saw the boxes of the films, the videos, the photographic negatives, and all the cassette tapes of Pro Wrestling Spotlight, every show I did. And I was like, there could be something here. Who knows? You know, so let's hold on to this stuff. And then really it was the catalyst was kind of really Russo when he said those things about me. My nephew, who used to listen to his podcast, texted me and said, hey, Genie, you know, Russo's talking about you. And he sent me a link. And I was like, that's it. That's enough. I'm not going to let him talk about me anymore. And I went after him. And he had challenged anybody who had any gripe with him that to have an open forum on his show, Truth with Consequences. And I reached out to his producer, Matt Kuhn. And I was like, I want to take him up on that offer.
Because I got a gripe.
It's on YouTube. I mean, He cried, all that stuff. But that's what kind of was the catalyst for me getting back in, because then I'm like, you know what? I have these pictures, these archives. Let me open up a Twitter account and Instagram under my real name, John Arezzi. And I was able to get at John Arezzi on both Instagram and Twitter immediately. No one else had that handle. And then I started posting pictures, and people started loving them. Yeah. And then I had done some sporadic interviews with Brian Last, because Brian was a listener, and he'd call me up, and he found me through Wade Keller or something. And because I said, dude, once in a while, Wade Keller would call me up, you know, even in my time in the music business. Hey, John, you know, would you want to come on the show and talk about this? I was like, yeah, why not? What I have, you know, what am I going to do? And then Brian and I discussed starting a podcast called Pro Wrestling Spotlight Then and Now. And that's what kind of got it, you know, that's what kind of got me in, back in. This is not full time by any stretch of the imagination, as you know. But, everything happens in this kind of crazy thing we call life, you know. So I'm happy to be doing what I'm doing right now. And we'll see what happens in the future. I don't know.
And I'm happy.
I don't know what tomorrow brings.
I'm happy to be sitting here too. You know,
and Marsh, she's happy.
Oh yeah, this is amazing. It's fantastic. Yeah, Tom, well, do you have a piece that you kept from any? I know you don't have anything wrestling related, but did you keep something music related?
Who, me?
Yeah, you asked us what our big piece was. Do you have a? Special,
you know,
fedora.
I have all my stage clothes. Yeah. The best thing I have is a collection of photos of me performing with B.B. King sitting side by side on stage.
Amazing.
You can actually see one at the Robert Charles Twitter. I have an alternate Twitter account, and the banner is myself with B.B. King singing. What song was it? When the Saints Go Marching In. This old religious hymn at the end of, you know, we would jam a lot. I was invited to all these jams that he used to do, and he would pull out, you'd go Saints, and the band would start playing, and if you didn't know it, you better shut up. But I didn't know at least the chorus of the song, and helped him out on that one. But I think it's my stack of photos of myself with B.B. King, and one of the greatest jams I have ever taken part was at the club in Manhattan. I'm on stage with B.B. King and John Mayer and a bunch of other famous blues people all at the same time. And I'm in blues heaven, man. It was just ridiculous. You know, what am I doing here? You know, one of those feelings. B.B. King was a gracious man. You know what? That's the memorabilia I should talk to you about. My B.B. King stuff from knowing him for 20 years. One of the greatest individuals you could ever hope to meet. He was like Bruno in that you talked to him for 5 minutes, you felt like you knew him your whole life. Just a wonderful man. Got to know him so well. I could say we were legitimate friends. And I'd have to say, of all the stuff that I've hoarded over the years, that's probably the best. But I keep weird memorabilia. One of my favorite pieces of memorabilia is a New York Mets hat signed by Jack Klugman. Oscar Madison.
Yes, the Odd Couple.
Right, exactly. So I collect odd stuff. I have memorabilia from unfamous people, friends of mine. Mm-hmm. I honestly have a memorabilia section in my den. I have my friends along with the famous people because I love them just as much, you know.
I do that too, actually.
You know what I'm saying? They're right alongside them. And there's no caste system there. And some of my favorite musicians are obscure, relatively obscure people like Mike Finnegan, who played with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Hendrix. He was a B3 player and the greatest singer I've ever heard in my life. I idolized the guy. Nobody knew who he was, but I knew who he was. And I finally got to meet him and got his autograph, and that's in my den too. Michael Finnegan. You know what I mean? I have weird tastes, so my weird memorabilia collection kind of reflects that. So
awesome. All right. Sorry to derail a little bit.
Hey, no problem. It was a great way to end the show with this conversation. It led to conversations that are spontaneous, and that's always fun. But guys, as we wrap up this edition of the show, I want to thank you both again, and please let everybody know out there where to find you both on social media.
Yeah, you can find me at Ref Marsh on Twitter, at WrestlingOnTheRocks.com is my site that gives the links to everything else. So,
And I'm at the new and improved Twitter page. It's just plain old Bob Smith PWS. The PWS stands for Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And it's on Twitter, which gets so much better every day, doesn't it?
Let's not talk about that.
Oh.
$8 a month for the blue check mark coming up soon. I mean, I don't even want to get into Twitter. I don't want to get into it. I mean, because it is what it is, and who knows what the hell is going to happen on Twitter before you know it. Who the frig knows?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, folks, I do want to make a quick plug. If you have not heard the Gibby Show, I invite you to check out the YouTube channel there. The Gibby Show. This past week, we had the Halloween episode, and I dressed up like Bartolo Colon. And John was making fun of me the whole show. So, and we had Alex Anthopoulos on for part two of the interview, and we talked about the World Series. A lot of fun there, the Gibby Show, and really good stuff happening there. And we're about to book some really cool guests coming up. Other than that, patreon.com/JohnArezzi. Don't forget to check out our group on Facebook, facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. We have the YouTube channel, of course. Please subscribe to that. That is youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And if you're listening to this show on Apple Podcasts, please remember to give it 5 stars and write a nice little review about us. We really appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter at John Arezzi. Instagram is at John Arezzi as well. And don't forget to check out that sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, covering all the shows I covered in the Mecca of all arenas 50 years ago. The next show is November 27th, so look forward to that. Morales against Ray Stevens. Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, co-hosted by Tim Petre, written and researched by Richie Garcia. Thank you to our co-host Bob Smith, our producer and creative director Marsh. Thanks to Patreon executive producers Anthony Pyrus and Joe Holloway. And for all the patrons for your support, helping with the production cost of this show. And thanks to our new sponsor, Curable. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.